Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to the Coaching Coordinator Podcast. I'm joined today by now the offensive assistant at Army, used to be the head football coach at Kansas Wesleyan and a guest on this show before, Matt Drinkel. Matt, it's great to catch up with you.
Keith, thank you so much for having me, man.
And, you know, officially, congratulations on the new job at Army. I'm sure presents some changes, but in talking to you, I think you're really excited about the opportunity as well.
Yeah, it was a no-brainer, you know, having a chance to – I knew kind of strategically my plan was going to be to move up in level but down in title. And I was really fortunate that 2 years ago when I spoke at the AFCA convention, it was a really big room with a couple hundred people in it, and one of the guys that was in there watching who hung out afterwards to visit with me was Coach Munkin. I'd never met him before. He just happened to come into the presentation, and we went to his hotel later that night in the lobby and talked a little football, and then had a chance to get out and visit West Point last spring for the first time in my career, and then stayed in touch during the year and was able to join up with these guys here to an already rolling great situation. Just, you know, for the people who don't know, just West Point is just a, you know, this isn't necessarily like a sales pitch. I mean, it's just, it's an incredible place with like the best people. I mean, I've never seen anything like this before as far as like the discipline and the quality of the human beings just everywhere. And that there's a standard for everything that they do not lower. And it all starts with Coach Munkin and the culture he's built here. And, you know, we were talking a little bit before we got going, but that guy's the real deal, man. I mean, it's just what you see is what you get. And he's got a plan for everything. Like I said, he clearly defines every facet of the entire program. So being in a place like this where you're just around really good people, whether that's academic people or generals or the coaches on staff, you're learning so much every day about everything. So that to me has been the most fun. Plus, I don't get any emails or text messages anymore from administration. So not being a head coach, I don't miss that very much at all.
Right. Well, that is part of that being the head coach. You got to deal with that side of it as well. You know, going back to the AFCA, and you mentioned Coach Munkin hanging out with you and talking to you after. What was it in your talk that I guess grabbed his attention and he wanted to talk to you more about?
So here's the crazy part: is like I have never in my career, My topic was the evolution of the run game, and I think there's been a really big shift in college football where between offensive and defensive football. And what I mean by that is it used to be offenses would change personnel all the time. You change personnel, and with that personnel, you're getting a certain set of formations, and out of those formations, you're going to get a handful of plays. That's how offenses work, and defense rolled out with a 3-4, and they played that against everybody, everything all the time, but they rolled out with a 4-3, and that was their 11 guys. And now I think the scheme of college football is completely flipped, where defensively you see all kinds of personnel packages now. It's a, hey, it's here's these people are going in the game, you're going to get certain fronts, and out of these certain looks, or, you know, we're going to do certain couple things. And then offensively, you're seeing teams keep more and more of the same 10 or 11 guys on the field, and how people are now offensively utilizing space and tempos as a resource like they used to do with formations and plays. And I think that's been a major, major shift. So my talk was about how I've been kind of trying to keep up with that and utilizing that in the offense. And then what was crazy is I had never coached in any kind of like option football before, like true option football, like the old school stuff. And what was crazy to me is once I sat down and started talking football with Coach Munkin and Coach Davis, the OC here, is, man, what we're trying to do in both of our offenses, they look absolutely nothing alike, but what we're trying to do is almost identical. Mm-hmm. So the way I saw it in my head, and I was explaining to him, was, you know, we're all trying to end up in the same destination offensively, the cars we're driving to get there in just look different. You know, we're all trying to run the ball effectively and not turn it over and eliminate negative plays and manipulate people in space and things like that. And it's just, some of them look different. It looks different wherever. It's about fitting it to your, you know, what your kids can do and what your coaches can coach and things like that. So that was like jaw dropping to me, but yeah, I guess the run game talk, and you know, anytime you're going to talk run game with Coach Munkin's all interested. So he'll get after it. And, it went pretty well. Plus we're both, he played at Milliken, which is in Illinois, which is not very far from where I grew up. So he's from Joliet, the south side of Chicago. And I'm from Eastern Iowa. So we ended up kind of knowing some of the same people and experiencing kind of the same stuff and that growing up in the Midwest.
Matt, when you look at that common thread between the offenses, you know, you were more of a gap scheme, power counter, downhill run game. You know, I saw, you know, sent me some clips. I saw a lot of pistol and you guys really in what looked like 21 personnel getting downhill at people, you know, comparing that to the traditional triple option type of team. What's the common thread you guys talked about, you know, between the two where, as you said, you're looking to do the exact same thing?
So it's really, it's I guess the common thread is we're both in the sense of like, I mean, it just doesn't sound sexy at all, but we're both like, we all, when I say both, I mean myself, Coach Munkin, Coach Davis, those two guys have been together forever, but we're just trying to accomplish basically the exact same thing, which is don't ever turn it over and don't take zeros and minuses. If you're always moving it forward with the same kind of culture and physicality, you're in good shape. So then what I learned that like blew my mind was that both offenses really, when you kind of boil it down to it and I guess dumb it down a little bit, like what I learned the most about it was both offenses use a lot of window dressing to end up doing the same kind of stuff. And what I mean by that is, you know, I might have, you know, free release motion out of the backfield or fly sweep stuff or, you know, different kind of shift or trade or whatever to hide me running a base play. Well, at West Point, Coach Davis will do the exact same thing with unbalanced numeric, unbalanced tackle over, hiding different splits and motions and form to kind of end up doing the same thing. What I couldn't believe was how little option, like true triple option, they ran here. When, you know, the first thing I did my first week was we did like a data analysis from the previous year and they only ran 38 snaps, a true triple. So it's a power run offense that they've built and evolved here, which is really what I was doing. It's just about how you were utilizing the people outside, you know, that a lot of their formations start tight and can bring a guy in motion and you can add a pitch to it. That's, you know, a traditional pitch and mine were more spread out and put a guy in space early and the pitch is overhand, but I mean, really, you know, it counts as a passing statistic. So I just couldn't believe how many similarities there are. And then the, just philosophically, the different ways you go to attack it. You know, I think one of the smartest things Coach Davis does here as the OC is he does so much with unbalanced and formations that it's got to take you defensively. You know, I always, as a head coach, I always hated it when teams did like that swinging gate stuff on PAT field goal.
Right.
Because you have to put in a whole bunch of time preparing for just to align to that. And then that takes away reps of actually executing against the scheme. I think Coach Davis does so much stuff with formations and unbalanced and heavies and all that. It takes you probably 2 full days of practice out of your, you know, 5. Just to align everything and fit everything. And then on top of that, then you got the whole play series and play checks. And then the part that Coach Munkin, I guess, really emphasizes is just, it's a hard deal to simulate the intensity, physicality and things from there. So they have a really good, like 3-tiered, you know, as an outsider, a new guy, like a 3-tiered approach to a game week that just, and I don't, you know, I think some of it's done strategically and some of it's just done because they're really good at what they do. And that's how they, you know, they've had success every single where they've gone. And I think it puts a lot of stress on you defensively. And I mean, what else is there? You know, whatever offense you run, you want to be really difficult to defend week to week, and they're really good at it here. So,
yeah, and I think those are some tools really any offense can use. I've seen more and more people talking about and clinicking about, especially the heavy sets and the unbalanced sets, you know, tackle over, that kind of stuff. Because it does drive a defense crazy, because it's something different. You're going to have to recognize and adjust in game. You got 1 week to prepare for it.
Oh, it's awesome. And the other part too, you know, like Coach Davis is a super sharp guy, and he'll try to learn something new from everybody. But it's just them. I guess I'll use the word misconception, but he and I were laughing this weekend because, you know, everybody sees Army as this triple option only, and that's kind of their whole deal. And, you know, their formation wise is that, you know, the base formation is the double slot, you know, two wide receivers with the dive back. And we were just at the Cool Clinic, the O-line clinic in Cincinnati. And one of the best speakers there was Coach Pittman from Georgia. And as everyone knows, Georgia runs the ball very, very well every year, no matter what, no matter who they have. They're one of the five best in the country doing it. And his whole deal was, he was showing like their zone stuff, and they use the exact same formation as us, except for their slots were lined up on the ball as H-backs and ours are off the ball. And other than that, every single other piece of it was completely identical. And it's just, but they're seen as, you know, that's offense is seen as a pro style, you know, typical SEC offense, whereas ours is seen as triple, but we're both doing the same thing the same way. So it's just, it's really interesting to see how different people at different levels manipulate formations and how they just go about their work. It's really fascinating to me.
Absolutely. Well, I enjoy the conversation on the offensive part here and the X's and O's, but my main purpose of having you on really is to go back to some of the things you were doing at Kansas Wesleyan in terms of what you did in your work week and how your coaching staff worked together. And, you know, I think I said it on Twitter back when I saw you guys at AFCA in San Antonio. And really, that was just a small glimpse of it. I followed you all year long. You know, we're friends on Facebook. So to see all the different things you guys were doing, I said in my tweet something like, this staff has the most fun in America. Like, literally, I think you guys did. It was incredible just to see the camaraderie, to see you guys out there having fun. And on top of it, you were having a lot of success. But, you know, there's a, and I think this appeared in some of your presentation at AFCA that ended up on Football Scoop, but there's a lot of outside-the-box thinking in the way you've put things together and the way you structured things for your staff.
Yeah, it's I'm trying to figure out a place to start. I guess it's extremely unique, and it was a cognitive choice that I made and a big part of my strategic attack to get us to the point where we wanted to be. So I guess if you want to start with this is that, you know, I think one of the words that gets thrown out all the time in football right now is culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think a lot of people define what that is or how you get there. So to me is, I want everyone in my program, when I was a head coach, I want everyone to have a great experience. Okay. You can't win all your games. Okay. If you only define success as wins and losses, I think that's terrible. I think it's a really bad plan. Okay. And I'll use baseball. You could have a pitcher throw like a 21 strikeout game and give up one to earn run and lose.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have another pitcher, you know, give up 9 runs and get pulled in the, you know, fourth, fifth inning and then get the win. So to me, if you define it only as winning and losing, you're in for a long ride, because there's a lot of variables that go into that now, you know, more than ever. So I want everyone to have a great experience. Well, if they're going to have a great experience, that's defined by the culture. The culture is defined by behaviors. Okay, so it feeds that way. And however your people behave, coaches, players, support staff, that is the culture you're going to have, is based on behavior. Whatever that culture is your defines your experience. So I think if you are really aware of that, that gives you a big advantage or leg up as far as planning goes. So One of the other things I did was when you coach at smaller levels, and it's probably a lot like this everywhere, you can't pay your staff as much as you want them to. Everybody wants to be compensated for good work. And I think you have to use the term compensation as opposed to pay. Okay. Right. So when you're at a smaller school, those slots are just budgeted in as, you know, into an Excel workbook and the budget in the business office somewhere. You know, I could try to hire Urban Meyer as an assistant at Kansas Wesleyan. That dude's going to make 40 grand if he's my number two guy, you know, like that's it. I mean, that's what he's going to get paid. So, if you look at it, then what are other ways I can compensate my staff to make sure that I have quality people? I saw it as a head coach as two ways: work environment and time. I can compensate them that way. That is something I can control to make them feel valued, so I can retain good coaches that are happy to be there. And I think that's a big deal. So as a result of that, you know, those guys will trust you more. They'll be more happy. They'll be more motivated. And I want to have a great, incredible working environment, because I believe then if you go into that behavior thing I was talking about, if my coaches are super happy all the time at work and they're energetic and then they're enthusiastic, and when they go out to the bar on a weekend or they take their wives out to lunch or dinner and somebody talks to them, every conversation they're having is positive. It's genuine. It's sincere. When they talk to players, when they talk to somebody in the academic department or the athletic training staff, it's all positive. It's genuine. It's upbeat. I think that it carries a lot of weight, because then that bleeds in everywhere to help pull up the alignment in the same direction. So I think a lot of places that struggle, and don't get me wrong, it was not, it was every day was a struggle at Kansas Wesleyan in the sense of total institutional alignment, you know, making sure everybody's on the exact same page. And at the same time, you know, like coaches and the administration probably will never all the way be on the same page, because they're going to want you to recruit, you know, everybody as a 30 ACT and 4.0 student and try to get them to pay more money than they should. And you want the best players that are the best fit and paying nothing. So there's a disconnect there. So I think, but those little things that can like leak into the program, I see them like the grout on a brick wall. You have all the bricks and all the pieces, but those are worthless unless there's something holding it all together. You know, an underlying thing that gets no credit. You know, I heard Mike Leach say a long time ago, like, what's the most important part of a car? And he lets everybody name it. And he says lug nuts, because the whole thing can't go without lug nuts. Like, every little thing matters, was, I guess, the point of his talk. So as far as the work environment and time, that was my philosophy, I guess, behind it, was that was going to bleed into every part of the program. Now, I said this when I spoke at the AFCA convention, and everybody just went dead silent, because they either thought I was lazy or an idiot or a liar. So and that I felt like the whole room just immediately, like the air got pulled out of it. During the season, we did not go into the office one single time before 10 a.m. We did not stay one single time past 6 p.m. I guess 6:30. Practice got over and we got it back in 6:30. So my philosophy behind that was I had two full-time guys. Some of it was by design and some of it was out of necessity. I had really good staff there, really, really good staff. And my two full-time guys had brand new babies. So both under 1 year old or right at it. So I wanted to do everything I could so that those guys were getting, you know, their wives are supportive of what's going on, and they can spend time with their kids. And I mean, when you're not coaching and making $7 million a year, you know what I mean?
Right.
So to me, that's a whole different dynamic as far as the support I can provide their home life. So we came in at 10 o'clock every day and everybody was well rested. Everybody was enthusiastic. Everyone was excited. And it was awesome. We were genuinely excited to be there every single second of every single day. We were happy to see the kids. You know, no one was like not getting any sleep or you know, getting yelled at home because they're gone all the time and or they're missing certain things and they feel like they're making compromises in their lives. And I always told myself I wanted to become a head coach. And when I became a head coach, I was going to do it my way. And if I failed, I at least went down fighting my kind of fight. So I don't, you know, obviously you adjusted everywhere you go, but that was a humongous deal to me. So I always thought about it like, how are you going to get more work done? You know, it's like if you go into a gym and you work out, if you're benching 300 pounds for 5 reps, is that more or less work than somebody who's benching 150 pounds for twice the reps? You know, it's the same kind of work. It's just you go about it different ways. So, you know, I've heard stories of people that, you know, they're not allowed to leave until the head coach leaves and they're staying there till midnight every night. Like, I don't need to do that. Like, I built the systems, you know, we built the systems on offense and defense to do a little more conceptual all-purpose stuff and be in sound things more often than perfect things, and did that intentionally. And as a result, you know, we might only be at the office, you know, maybe 6 hours less a day than somebody else. But boy, I bet you I'll challenge anybody that we were getting the same amount or more work done, and the quality of our work and morale was higher. And I think that was reflected by our players having fun at practice and in games, and our coaching staff, and just it was a very positive environment to be around. And it was just doing it, not necessarily different. That wasn't the goal, obviously, but like doing it in a way that was the right fit and in the best interest of what we were trying to get accomplished.
And I think that's refreshing to hear that probably for a lot of coaches. I know, I mean, we mirror what we see happening at the higher levels. And I worked in a small school, small college football before. And I mean, we were in that office and working like we were those guys making 6 and 7 figures, right? Time and work environment are very important. I always thought our work environment was decent, but our time was awful. And so, I mean, let's break it down. Let's talk about a day, right? And let's just say it's those 3 full-time employees and yourself. I mean, if there's 6 less hours a day you're working than everybody else, you're going to multiply that by 3. That's 18 hours. Where are you making up the difference? How are you doing that? I know part of it probably comes from being fresh and being able to make, decisions because you're rested. You know, there's times I think, you know, you're in there at 3 a.m. and you're like, God, I don't know, you know, what should we do? And, you know, maybe you're not making the best decision. So how do you, I guess, find that efficiency? And in terms of making sure the work is done, how are you making sure all the work is done? Are there things you discarded maybe that, you know, in past jobs you were doing before?
Yeah. I mean, there's just different ways, I guess, that we saw things. So I guess the number one thing is we don't have like waste time. You know, there's no like, we don't have a couple hour chunks where we're just sitting around doing nothing, waiting on, you know, like the staff sitting there because I'm in a meeting or doing something else and we can't get anything done. There is very, very, if any, downtime, I guess, which is really good because the day goes fast. But the biggest piece, so we'd come in at 10. So my staff was myself and 2 other full-times and 3 GAs. So we had a total of 6 people in the office all day, every day. So what I did as a head coach was they each had an on-the-field job that they oversaw, and that was their position group, you know, what they were going to be coaching on that side of the ball. And then an off-the-field job and responsibility. So my defense coordinator was also the strength and conditioning coach. Our full-time other guy was on defense as well, and he was operations and administration stuff. The GAs handled, one was a recruiting coordinator, one was a video coordinator, one was like academics and facilities. So we would start every day at 10 o'clock with a staff meeting, and I tried to get that thing over and done in less than 10 minutes. And it was basically each of those guys, we'd sit down and they would debrief the group on their area that they oversaw. So, hey, this is what's, we got study hall tonight at 7 o'clock. You know, I've got the attendance. Okay. Lifting is today after, you know, today during the day or whatever time. Hey, we got three recruits coming by campus for practice today, and get the whole thing in and out and try to be done in 10 minutes and get to work. And then from there, like I said, just during the season, we had a very different approach. I talked about this a little bit once before, but we'd play on Saturday and then we would do, Sundays, we'd come in at 10 to noon. So we were in 10 to noon on Sunday. And in that time we'd review maybe 15, 20 snaps from the game, preview the opponent and lift. And they were, I tried to get the kids out of there by 12 o'clock so they could go watch pro football the rest of the day. Coaches, we probably left on Sundays, I want to say maybe 5 o'clock, 4 or 5 o'clock, right in that area, where we kind of get an idea on the opponent, make sure we're not banged up, any major injuries, things like that, just kind of a review and proceed. And then, so they had basically after at noon o'clock on Sunday, the kids were completely off the rest of the day. Then they had Monday completely off. Can't do anything. Now they're full blown mandated day off. And then Tuesday we'd go out, no meetings, go out on the field, for about 35 minutes, 25 minutes of it was the kicking game review. You know, just the, hey, here's the special teams depth for this week. You know, you do all the odds and ends, onside kick, recover, you know, hands team, kick our turn after safety, all the goofy stuff. And then we do 10 minutes of opponent preview. Okay. So the kids had Sunday, Monday, Tuesday to do two things. One, recover, physically recover as much as they possibly can. Okay. I want all the guys that are going to be playing in the next Saturday's game to be at all of the practices that they get as many of the reps as they can. Right. So they get a full half week basically to recover. And then since they're not doing anything, there's no load on them physically, they can load up mentally and get a lot of film watched, and cut-ups watched. We very rarely, and when I say very rarely, I can't speak for the defensive side, I never watch full games anymore. Mm-hmm. I'll watch only efficiency cut-ups. See, I can say all this stuff now because I'm not in charge of anything. this isn't how Army does it, so I can share some of the insight, so this is easy. But, you know, we would just make cut-ups and efficiency cut-ups. And I would watch runs of four or more, passes of eight or more, and goal line red zone. And that's how I'd game plan. So I'd watch the runs of four or more, and I'd watch them the one time through of all the gap runs together, all the zone runs together. I'd watch all the 3x1s together, all the 2x2s together, and I have a pretty good plan. This is how they're going to line up, and then you got a pretty good plan of this is what they're really good at stopping or this is what they're not very good at defending. And we would only break down three games, and unless it was a non-common opponent, you know, like somebody was under center running triple all the time or something like that, we wouldn't even break that one down. So we were able to get those cut-ups out to the kids, and they'd be able to watch that, and they have a pretty good idea that, hey, like, we're going to carry, like, week to week. This is the thing I think is the best. We don't add anything on offense or defense. We didn't add anything, ever. It was just about figuring out the best ways to get into the stuff that we run. So we're gonna run, like, our power play. We're going to run our counter tray. We're going to run our inside zone play. We're going to run power reach. We're going to run those every single week. I don't care who we're playing. It was about figuring out the best ways for our personnel or formations to be, you know, find three or four of those calls each game and go from there. So I think that there's the way, you know, we mentally approached it was a big deal. You know, the other piece, so that kind of takes you through the week. We go full pads on Wednesday, shells on Thursday, and we would go shells on Friday for about an hour at full game speed. So Fast Fridays took that from Coach Frost and out in Nebraska. Really, really liked that. Thought that did a way better job of preparing us. So the whole week was basically a crescendo that was building up to the game as opposed to, you know, a roller coaster of intensity and durations and things like that. And then get ready to go. And, you know, a couple other things. I read a really good book. I did different for the first time this year. I read a great book called The Starbucks Experience, which is basically the story of why Starbucks went from like one corner coffee shop in Seattle to on every single corner in every town in America. It was basically the whole gist of it's giving away ownership. If you can give away, just like give and get investment to the people that are participating in it, you'll get better buy-in. So I never did anything with the team as far as like, you know, I would, after practice, I have about a 30-second couple things of announcements. That's it. Before practice, I assigned a kid, each of the, like a certain kid each practice to do the, you know, address the team and things like that. And we did that on game day. You know, I'd go out for, you know, before pregame started at whatever, 65 minutes on the clock. I'd peek my head in the locker room, tell everybody I loved them, wish them good luck and to have fun. And that was it. Those guys would go through pregame, come back in. There was a kid assigned to address the team, and they would be out before the game started. You know, with 10 minutes to go, go out there, do the anthem, play. And I think that that was awesome. Those guys know way better about what's going on. I mean, you know, I'm getting older. I understand young people less and less every day, every second of every day. I understand old people less and less. I basically am losing it. So I figure, what's the point? Let those guys who know better do better. So, and that was really great for us, because that is not a strength of mine, getting those guys, you know, amped up and fired up or whatever. So all those things I think factored in and were really good. So we, you know, we'd meet, go out, practice, get over, everybody go home. That was it. Start up the next day. And it's actually pretty crazy. Like Coach Munkin, that's his big thing here that everybody loves working for him is, you know, he gives you a lot of time off. Practice gets over, you're gone. You know, we start up at 8:30, you're gone. You know, get ready, get into work and get going. So he does a great job of managing time aspects of the coaches here as well. So that was just, I think that's just so absolutely critically important. And I think, you know, the one analogy I will make that I think is really important, and I'll try to explain this the best I can, because I believe this when it comes to like organizational structure or like running your scheme on whatever side of the ball you're doing. Okay. Think about a Madden game right now. Okay. Like if you go buy the new Madden game,
right?
It can do 9,000 things, right? It can do everything. You can create a stadium, create a player. You can do all kinds of controls. They got a passing vision window. There's like two joysticks on the controller. It can do 17,000 things. How many people can pick up Madden today and in 10 minutes be good at it and be having fun and having a great experience with it? Very few. I mean, I don't know anybody now. I mean, it takes a ton of work and a ton of reps. And does that make it a better game than when it came out on Sega and it had three buttons? Because everybody could pick up, like Madden became popular because it was simple and inclusive on the front end. It had three buttons. You could have never played the game before. You could pick it up. You'd be good at it in 10 minutes and you're having a great experience. So to me, it's like, just because there can always be more doesn't mean that's always better or what you're looking for. Now, at the same time, I realize obviously you can't be a caveman and someone's going to listen to this, this guy's an idiot. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And that's probably true. But like, I think about that just because you can always do more doesn't mean it's better. I like my wife goes nuts and goes crazy at me because I hate going to like fancy places to eat. Why is steak better because it has 19,000 garnishes or ways you can cook it? I mean, go to Outback, give me medium and like, let's go. I don't need any sauce. Can put ketchup on it. I don't care. Like, it's the same thing. You're not going to remember it in 5 minutes anyway. Who cares? So I think simple is very, very good. And a lot of people lose sight of that. And I think if you can figure out, a way with something, anything in life and work, whatever, to make something that is complicated simple, you are on to something. That is a good deal. And I think I was just talking to the Temple coaches about this. I think the next big area that's going to happen is recruiting. Somebody's going to figure something out in recruiting that is going to change the complete and total dynamic of college football recruiting. And it's going to happen in the next, like, I think 3 to 5 years, because right now everyone, like there's so many people that are doing it the same. You know what I mean? Like the rules, the days you can be on the road, how you're impacting social media, with reach and the big dynamic that's changing is like a kid might be playing at Stanford one day. And I just saw today, like right before we started this interview, like the Pac-12 got rid of the 1 year residency rule. So unless I'm like crazy, I think that means a kid could leave Stanford and go play in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like that's going to be a big deal. Like that's an important piece of the puzzle for, you know, if the landscape is shifting, somebody to figure something out. So I think that the simplicity and easiness of it is going to be, it's always a good thing.
Matt, you seem to at least have a thought process that leads you to these things. What are, I guess, those starting point questions you ask yourself to try to figure things out, whether that's, you know, what you're doing on offense, how you're going to run your program, or like down the line, maybe it's recruiting. But what are some of those questions you start with in order to, get you going in a direction in this process to evaluate all the different things you do?
I know it sounds kind of lame or whatever, but I try to, you know, I have two dry erase boards in my office when I was a head coach, and I took three columns. I would write like ideas or notes to myself on, and the three columns were football, recruiting, administration. And I would always constantly be assessing those. We're in the, like, each place is unique. Every school, even in the same division, is unique. You're going to have internal strengths and internal weaknesses, and to be able to take advantage of those or avoid those things that are really critical to everybody's success. That's why I think if you look at what Coach Munkin has done here, it is like jaw-droppingly impressive. Like I had a heart attack because there can be a kid here who we evaluate. We love him. He's a great football player. One of the best football players in the country. He's a 4.0 student. He's got a 32 on the ACT, and he wants to come here. Well, if he has a shellfish allergy, he can't go to school here. So like there's like limitations like that can just pop up, and you don't hear, like me, you know, you think, oh, you hear that, you want to complain about it. There is not the culture here. There's not one piece of anybody using anything as an excuse to not perform and do your best and do well. And I think that so fitting those areas to each piece is really, really critical. So I think from a football side, the number one thing you need to assess is, what do I need to do here to win? One of the best ways I think we evaluated personnel. So here's how I did recruiting when I was at Kansas Wesleyan. I, as the head coach, served two roles in recruiting. I would do a roster analysis and projection, and then I would, make a couple calls or whatever, and contact support later on in the process to help seal a recruit. But what I did in the recruiting process was, okay, here's our roster. I always plan for about 7 to 9% of attrition. Unknown variables, whatever. Kid doesn't make it in school. Kid's got fell in love with a girl over the summer. He's not coming back, whatever. I planned for that. So, you do a roster assessment and you give out, I'm going to use this term, even though it's probably not the right word, but like a quota to each of the coaches. Like, hey, these are your number expectations. I need you to sign, we need to sign this many elite guys at this position. We need to sign depth guys at these positions. Each of you, here's what you got to get done and go. And I was, by this date, we need to have these amount of guys signed. And I didn't bother them. I didn't care if they made 500 phone calls. I didn't care if they made no phone calls. They were using Twitter, however they were doing it. Want to go, plan, go on the road together somewhere. I think that was a big deal. But the number one barometer I used was if you take the last 3-5 years in your conference or your league, who are the three best teams? Okay, would they trade their guy for our guy, yes or no? If the answer is no, we got to get better at that spot. You might, and that's hard to do. And that a lot, as a head coach, I was able to do that easier because you're not like quite as connected to each of the guys. A linebacker is going to love all of his linebackers no matter what.
Right.
He'll get, goggles on that don't allow him to see quite as clear as he needs to because the kid might work really hard, but he might not be good enough either. So, I think that's the number one thing is who you have to go through. Like the Big Ten, it's a totally different league from half to half, and who you have to beat and who you have to go through and who you have to build your teams to defend and attack is a totally different deal. So I think from a football standpoint, that's the number one piece. I think it's different if you coach football in New York than Southern California. The geographical assets you're going to be able to have versus the weather you're going to play in, the conference, the style of football. So I think being able to assess those things is really critical. Same thing in recruiting, obviously with that same boat. You know, I mentioned on this before, like we didn't dress up when we went on the road recruiting on purpose ever, because I wanted to sit down with those guys and be relatable to those kids. And, you know, I said that kind of, that was kind of our approach or whatever. Then you see, you know, like Scott Frost, I'll use him as an example. Like he's doing official visits and he's got on a, you know, ball cap and jeans and he just a regular dude. And I think that guys, like kids buy into that and that's good. And that fits them, you know, that's at Nebraska and he's a Nebraska dude and you know, won a national title there. That's a great fit for them. And I think, you know, it'd be crazy to not think that he's doing that strategically. So really, I think like out of all the stuff we did, I think the only thing I was actually any good at was being able to take two steps back always at any point in time and assess what we're doing and why we're doing it. I'm a big believer in that, like offensively. Like I can tell you right now in my old power spread offense, I had two sprint out pass concepts. Now I had a lot of ways to window dress it and get there, but I had two. And the reason I had two was because every year I call that 4.8 times a game. So I'm going to, if I'm lucky, run each one of those plays twice in a game. If I'm lucky, you know, screen, I carried one screen because I called screens in games 1.8 times a game. I don't need 15 of them. I don't need to change those week to week. I don't need to do that because I can't justify to my assistants or the players, why am I calling a million things when, you know, why are we carrying a million things when I'm only going to call it once, maybe twice in a game.
Right.
Now, if you're going to run power 500 times a game like we did, you better have a bunch of ways to disguise that and masquerade it and do things like that. So, it sounds corny too, but I do have, a one-page sheet that I print out at the beginning of every week. That's kind of like an outline, not a mission statement, but just like an offensive outline to make sure I'm staying on course. You know, you can evaluate the last week's practice, the last game. Hey, are we doing these things? Are we the most physically tough team? Did we run the ball effectively and efficiently? Were we avoiding negative plays and turnovers? And you have to be able to answer some of those. And it's hard because sometimes the answer is no. And you go, God dang, I probably didn't emphasize this right or get these drills set up to simulate what's going to happen in the game correct. And you have to be able to say, you know, take a hard look in the mirror and say, I got to do a better job and get these guys prepared. It's one of those deals, you know, like that old leadership saying that when things are going bad, look in the mirror. And when things are going good, look out the window, you know, assess instead of bitching and moaning and complaining and pointing the finger, figure out what you can do better to make things right. When things are going really good, appreciate all of the people and all of the moving parts that make it so that's possible, because it's way more than, you know, a handful of people. It takes everybody.
Well, Matt, I really appreciate you digging into this and sharing your thought process. We saw the results this past season, as I said, not just on the scoreboard, but being able to watch, you know, you personally, the stuff you're posting, what's going on in your life, the fun you guys are having. And I think there's a lot to learn from it. So I appreciate you taking the time and sharing a little bit about what's going on with Army and running the football, as well as all the things you did at Kansas Wesleyan to free up some time for your coaches and to have a positive work environment.
No, I appreciate the time. Thank you very much. It's been a fun experience. Hopefully I'll get fired here very soon. And I can contribute, do my little part to make this thing keep doing what it's been doing.
And you are a good follow on Twitter. I know before it was a lot of recruiting. Now you kind of share some ideas. I'm seeing more and more of those ideas and, you know, one idea dressed up a million different ways. I think you do that once or twice a week, but appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah.
Give your Twitter handle to our listeners.
It's just, it's at Drinkle Coach. And my last name is just like drinking all back to back, Drinkall, and we try to, you know, there's some things I can share and do now that I, you know, have nothing to do and are tied in the Army that are, I think, good for the coaching world and good for ideas to share. And because there's not a single thing I did ever that I didn't steal from somebody else. So I think the more guys that share ideas and get you to think, and you might love some stuff and you might not like it. And, but just getting the ball rolling and people thinking and doing stuff. And I think that's good. And it's so easy to get in. I think that's the best part about the game of football right now is information is 10 times more accessible now than it's ever been. And I think that's awesome because there are so many smart, good coaches everywhere. I mean, at all levels from high school, the NFL, and there's bright, brilliant people everywhere. So you can pull from anybody, anytime.
Absolutely. Well, again, Matt, thank you for your time and good luck to you and the Knights in 2019.
Hey, thank you much.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Please check out all we're doing on Twitter at our Twitter handle for coaches at FBDEVCoach. Check out our systems for blocking, defeating blocks, and tackling at footballdevelopment.com. If you register there with your email address, you can get access to our shoulder tackle system, the entire system, as well as 3 free videos of your choice, either from advanced tackling or from our contact system, which is blocking and defeating blocks. This is some of the best stuff, some cutting-edge stuff, I think, that you're going to find is very efficient and effective in the way you teach your players. And there's a lot of drills here that help you improve that skill year-round. Check it out at footballdevelopment.com. Check out our coaches' notes on usafootball.com. Go to the resources tab for development and training. Our coaches' notes are given to us by coaches around the country, state champs, some of the NCAA leaders. Those guys have been doing a great job in putting that together in our tips format, which is teach, install, and problem solve. And in there, we also have further review, which we allow our clips to be downloadable, and you can download those and put them into your Huddle. No need for an extra subscription to a Huddle page. So check those out. And as always, go to blogs.usafootball.com for our show notes, our analysis, articles, and coaching. Finally, if you're enjoying the podcast, head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rate. If you have a minute, write a review. It really helps out the podcast.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.